Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. She's here with us. Joan is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she's one of the most steadfast members of our Brain Trust because she joins us every week to talk to us about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world. And you know what that means, folks. That means she just can't get enough of the show. Right, Joan?
Yes, right, exactly. Whatever you say, yeah, Jim, it's your show.
Well, it's like a dream come true, I know. So what's going on, Joan?
Well,
did you see the protesters this last weekend? The World Trade,
the March for Women's Lives.
Oh, that's right. That was this weekend. That's right.
Yeah.
You know, did you watch any of that? Did you attend that?
Did I attend it? No, was I in town? No, I was in town. I did not attend it, but it was the pictures were amazing.
You know, and what I saw there was the interesting thing that I saw was, and I watched a little bit of it. I did, and I heard a lot of talk about what about how women need to have certain things improved and all that, and I don't disagree with some of that. But one of the things
Careful,
I heard a lot about what some politicians need to be doing for women that they're not doing for women.
Yeah.
And there was one particular party that they really kind of didn't like, this group.
Just one.
They liked one party, but they didn't like the other party.
Okay.
But what was interesting to me is that one party that they didn't like, they never got around to saying, you know what, we don't like all these things that you guys do for women. You do them against women or whatever. But we're going to have to give you credit because you did liberate women in Iraq and in Afghanistan. You did do that. I didn't hear any of that, Joan.
Well, they don't look terribly liberated to me.
You don't think that the women in Afghanistan are better off today than they were 2 years ago?
Well, I would hope they are, but I think, you know, they're probably going to end up with an Islamic fundamentalist government, so they will end up being only marginally better off.
So you agree with what the ladies were saying, or actually what they didn't say, their omission.
I'm a little confused. Are you saying that they are?
I'm saying that they talked a lot about what was not being done, but they didn't give anybody any credit for what was actually being done.
Well, I think what is being done still remains to be seen what the outcome of that will be.
Ah, okay. So nobody gets any points for trying then, is that right?
Of course not.
Why don't we talk about technology, Joan?
We could do, boy, there's a segue for you.
Before I get into some serious trouble here, why don't we talk about some technology? This new tech recovery, are we in a tech recovery?
Well, I know some people wouldn't think that, but what Kiplinger says we are, therefore we are.
Well, I think you're right, and if you remember, Joan, you and I predicted this a year ago.
Yes.
You and I predicted that the tech recovery would happen and begin happening in second quarter 2003.
That's right.
And in fact, Joan, as always happens when you and I predict something, it came to pass.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
It came to pass, and so now we are seeing that, and of course, Joan, the reason for the tech recovery is because we went through about a three-year period where we had basically a tech depression, didn't we?
Oh, gosh, did we ever.
A technology depression. And yes. It was brought on by a number of different things, wasn't it?
Yes. It's not only the stock market drop, but a lot of overbuilding in the fiber optic area. And also a lot of, I guess, throwing good money after bad in terms of startups that really were never going to gel.
A lot of that. Also, don't forget the over-designing that we did for all of our systems that we justified because of Y2K, the impending Y2K in 99.
Right. And that's a good point, over-designing, but also overspending on Y2K so that the coffers were kind of empty when it came to upgrades a few years down the road.
Exactly. And so what happened was we front-loaded.
That's it.
We front-loaded all of that technology spending that would have been metered out a lot more evenly over 2001, 2, and 3. We front-loaded that into 99.
Yes.
In order to, partly for what you mentioned about the companies that never should really have been formed, all the dot bombs, but also
dot bombs.
But also the Y2K thing, and then of course we had 9/11,
yes,
and we've had a couple of wars, and so that's really put a hit on the technology companies, but the technology companies that I hear from and that I read about, they're not singing the blues anymore, are they?
Oh no! That's what we're saying, that this isn't going to be a boom and bust kind of thing. Things aren't going to go crazy, but there is going to be steady improvement in this sector.
Well, and you guys say that the spending is up 6% this year.
Yes.
For IT, for information technology.
Exactly.
6%. That's pretty big.
That's pretty comfortable, given how bad things have, particularly given how bad things have been the last few years.
Right. And of course, another point that you point out that I had not seen before, which is I'm really glad that you did that, and that is that IT spending accounts for 8% of the American gross domestic product.
Wow,
that's pretty strong.
That's pretty hefty.
Well, and you know what, Joan? I predict that number is going to rise. That a year from now or 5 years from now, we'll see that number going over 8%.
I could see that.
And another thing, Joan, is that's helped with the tech recovery has been the tax reform, the tax cuts that Mr. Bush enacted last May. Don't you think so?
Well, and there are specific tax cuts for technology, I think.
Well, mainly though, so many emerging companies, when the direct expensing was part of the tax bill that the president signed last May, that allowed companies to write off capital items, not just technology, but any capital asset,
That's true.
To $100,000 in 2003 and $102,000 in 2001. I'm sorry, in 2004. So my point is that that's contributed, I think, a good bit.
And Congress is working on trying to extend that relief because I think it's scheduled to expire. I believe it's next year,
I think it's scheduled to expire this year, the end of this
year. Right, yeah, I should have said the end of this year.
And they're talking about tacking two more years onto it, aren't they?
Yes.
Which I hope they do, because if they don't, something's going to happen that we're going to talk about right after these messages.
Ooh.
So you're going to have to hang on for that. 20 after, Jim Blassingame is here with Joan Pride. She's also here, and we're going to continue to have some fun on the other side of these messages. Stay with us. Get away too soon. I can't imagine. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, if somehow the tax, the direct expensing provision, which basically is a timing thing, as you probably know, as I know you know, because that's the world you live in, is if it's basically where instead of taking 5 years to write off a $25,000 item or a $5,000 item, instead of amortizing that depreciation over 5 years, up to that limit, $100,000 or $102,000 this year, you can write the whole thing off this year. So you front load that write off,
right,
instead of spreading it out.
Well, exactly.
A lot of people, especially if they're having a profitable year, and more companies are profitable in 2004. If by the end of the year, it looks like the last quarter, it looks like that the direct expensing is not going to be extended, and we may not know this until the end of the year.
Oh yeah.
If that happens, then look for some frantic information technology acquisitions, and also others, but especially technology. Look for some frantic buying, not unlike the pre-Y2K spending. Expect to see that in fourth quarter 2004, and therefore that will we'll have a slowdown in IT in at least the first half of 2005. What do you think?
Yeah, which is a shame because I think you want maybe a smoother recovery here as you say, front loading this and moving the spending into an earlier period, which is kind of what happened. If you remember, when the auto industry was having trouble, they kept sweetening their incentives and car sales went through the roof. Well,
right.
People were accelerating purchases of cars, and there had to come a time when that would drop off. So they were kind of victims of their own success there.
Well, they actually, and they also kind of devalued their automobiles, didn't they? I mean, it was
right, because now everybody expects discounts. And
they're still getting them.
Oh, sure. Well, they have to.
They're still getting 0% right. financing. So they really kind of deflated the value of their automobiles.
They kind of did what clothing retailers did years ago, too many sales.
Right. But now, Joan, I'm not sure you realize this, but you just made an excellent argument for extending the tax breaks.
I know.
How you feel about that? Are you okay?
I guess so.
I didn't want you to break out into a cold sweat or anything.
Oh, I did that.
What's leading the way? Tell us what's leading the way in the tech recovery. What are people buying more of, Joan?
Sales of personal computers.
And that had been off previously quite a bit, hadn't it?
Which is interesting to me because, people were talking about the demise of the personal computer in favor of the laptop, but people still are buying PCs. Now,
sales
of laptops will... I'm sorry.
No, so you actually differentiate a PC you think is like a tower, a desk unit, as opposed to a laptop.
Well, that's a good point. I really should be differentiating because sales of laptops will outpace those of desktop PCs, but both, I guess, are going to do very well.
Well, exactly. And I think what had happened, Joan, I think that the drop in sales in the technology sales, one of the things that a lot of the chip makers and of course the PC makers saw a considerable drop in PCs of all kinds, not just laptops, but as you were saying, the laptop has really picked up the pace. You know, Joan, we have the last three PCs we bought, the last three really powerful PCs we bought, were all three laptops.
Well, and now with wireless internet, a laptop really is completely portable. You're not tethered necessarily to a line anywhere.
Well, and that's exactly why. I mean, because we have that ability. But you know, Joan, they've got these really good ports now. These port systems that you can literally just plug your laptop into it. It becomes your CPU, and it drives a larger keyboard, a mouse, and a monitor.
Wow.
And of course, it has a plug on it for the electricity. But from now on, that's the way we're going to go. We're going to be buying laptops from now on.
Right, that makes sense.
They're very handy, and if you need a larger screen and a bigger keyboard and a mouse, then you can do that. I think those cost like $100 or so, $125 or something.
Wow.
Like that. Okay, what about software spending? That's coming up too, isn't it?
Well, that's true, and a lot of what's needed is, for example, to improve security. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of other business uses such as tracking inventory and uses for customer service as well. So, and it's all sizes of companies buying it, not just large companies.
And more, you know, one of the things exciting for me for small business owners, Joan, more and more small business owners are finding out that not only do we have some pretty powerful software available to us off the shelf, and we do. It's incredible. The capability that's available to us for $50, $100, $200, even $500, which is still cheap for the kind of power that's out there. But more and more, Joan, small business owners are finding out that for a little bit more, maybe $1,000 worth of tinkering by some smart person, we can actually get off-the-shelf software customized for us or our application.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's
really powerful. It's incredible. And folks, if you don't know what I'm talking about, find the smartest person you know in technology and ask them to explain to you about what I'm talking about. Tell them, you just say to them, if I wanted a customized customer service program, a customized delivery program or accounting package, you know, what would it take? And I think you're going to be surprised when you talk to your techies when they tell you how quickly it can be done and how inexpensively it can be done. Let's take a quick break. We're going to be right back with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. It's 29 after. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. We're visiting with Joan Pride. And Joan, that's where you like to think of me, isn't it?
Excuse me?
Yeah, you like to think of me as pretty much a god, don't you, Joan?
Whatever.
Telecom.
Your show.
Joan, one of the things that we didn't think would ever come back was spending for telecom.
Boy, that's true.
Telecommunications. What's up with that?
It's coming back. 2% gain after losing 73% over the previous 3 years. I can't
believe
that.
Talk about an over-designed, overbuilt industry.
Yeah.
They just went nuts, didn't they?
It was crazy.
And now we know most of it was bogus, don't we?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think they'd like us to use that word, but I think it's true.
Well, I mean, what do you call $11 billion in write-down of previous income from WorldCom, for example?
Right.
The largest bankruptcy in the history of mankind.
Yeah.
I mean, that's bogus. I mean, I remember people saying, well, don't get me on this. I'll get off of this. You remember people saying, you know, wow, how are they doing this? And they kept investing. You know, these guys are really smart. Well, turns out they weren't smart. They were defying the laws of economics.
Well, and anybody with any kind of business plan was getting financing. It was crazy.
That's right. No question. But anyway, it's good to see that industry coming back because, Joan, we don't need the telecom industry to just collapse any more than it has. Because more and more technology is not about the box that you have in your hand as much as it is about the connectivity to people with another box.
Well, that's right.
So we need a strong technology, a telecom industry. And, Joan, let's move over and talk about some areas that are benefiting from the tech recovery. Tell us about that.
This is interesting. We're saying that the top areas that will benefit, as you can imagine, are in California, and they include Los Angeles, San Francisco, Sacramento, San Jose, mm-hmm. and the like. But other areas, too. My own area of Washington, D.C., we're going through a huge boom right now.
Mm-hmm. You first talked about Silicon Valley, and where you are is Silicon Alley, they call it.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. We're kind of a mini Silicon Valley here, particularly mm-hmm. in the northern Virginia suburbs.
Right.
There are a lot of telecom firms that are doing a lot of hiring, and it's really helped the economy a lot here. But Texas, there are cities in Texas, and then the usual Chicago, Boston, New York areas.
Absolutely. Yeah, you guys identify at least two cities in Texas, no question. This is technology companies aren't the only ones, though, that are going to have healthy profits this year. One of the things you guys are reporting that we're seeing on the news right now is that more and more companies are posting a profit, aren't they?
That's right. The aerospace industry and also manufacturers of heavy machinery and raw materials. And I think this whole thing with aerospace and heavy machinery goes back to what we were talking about in terms of the economic recovery really getting people spending again.
Which adds, when you throw that into, and by the way, Joan, the good news is that more companies are finally getting some pricing power. Remember us, we lamented for a long time companies, especially small businesses, having trouble with pricing power. And folks, pricing power is simply the ability to pass along your higher cost to your customers in the form of higher prices.
Right. And we almost wondered whether it would ever come back.
Right. Which it has now.
Yeah, and beginning to come back.
And that along, which is helping the profitability, but those higher prices, along with the ones that are, hitting some of the commodities, like petroleum, those prices are going through the roof.
Right.
All of that and the economy heating up a little bit and the hiring and the raises that are happening, all that's looking like a little bit of inflation, which is kind of good news and bad news, isn't it, Joan?
Well, sure. I mean, the good news is that it's not deflation,
right,
which a lot of people have been worried about, particularly Mr. Greenspan.
Deflation.
Right. And the bad news is, well, if inflation comes roaring back, then the Fed is going to want to clamp down on that and raise interest rates.
I would hope that they wouldn't use that term, Joan. I hope when the Fed meets next Tuesday, there's no clamping down talked about in the meeting. I hope that they're talking about gentle nudges.
Soft landing.
Little gentle nudges. Well, yeah. you know, I don't think we need to land yet, Joan. I think we still need to propel a little bit into the sky.
Oh, sure.
But you guys predict that in August or September to look for a rate increase.
Right. And I'm sure that they're going to make it as small, no more than a quarter of a point, I would think, unless they really see inflation heating up. But they sure don't want to kill off this recovery.
It's going to happen in June. If it happens, it won't happen in the second half, Joan.
Because of the election.
Exactly. I think so. Because that's what I think. So I disagree with you about that, and we shall see what we shall see. 20 till. We'll be right back with Joan Pride, senior editor. With the Kiplinger Editors, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. Joan, I want to talk about the Kiplinger website a minute because it's really good, folks. I really do encourage you to check it out. I use it all the time. I still do. I used to use it. I started out using it many, many years ago, and I encourage you to check it out because it's free, a lot of good stuff there. And if you decide that that'd be one great way to find out if you think you'd like one of their publications, which includes the weekly Kiplinger letter, which is the flagship. It's been out since 23. That's 1923. And it comes every week. And also they got three biweekly letters, the tax letter, the California letter, and the agriculture letter. And then you also have a monthly magazine, right, Joan?
Correct. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And not only is it a subscription, folks, but you can also buy that one at the newsstands and bookstores. But Joan, I would think that a good way to find out if they like the way you guys write and the coverage that you have, the website would be a good way to test that out, wouldn't it?
That's true. You can do that.
Kiplinger.com. And what about a phone number, Joan?
That's right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
And folks, by the way, the publications, except for the magazine, comes by email or hard copy. And
that's correct.
And I get them both ways. I can't get enough. But also, they still have the Blassingame 30-day free trial.
Absolutely.
So check that out. They'll let you road test their publications for 30 days and see if you like them before you have to pay for it. Joan, let's talk about the electricity industry. How are we doing with the deregulation situation there?
Well, I don't have good news for you because we're saying that higher prices are ahead. We're saying that there's a shakeout going on, and that means that we think that by 2010, the average price of electricity will be 10 cents per kilowatt hour, and that's up 2 cents, which is pretty high. And we say, this is interesting, we say each 1 cent hike raises the overall cost to users, you know, in the aggregate by about $36 billion.
Yeah.
That's huge.
That's a lot of money. And, it's one of the things that's going to have to happen, though, I think we're all going to become more efficient energy users, too. I think that's, don't you see that in our future, Joan, not only with electricity, but with petroleum as well? Aren't we going to have to find better ways to meter out and to manage the resources that we have?
Well, sure. I think it's inevitable. It's got to happen.
And it's not something Americans like to think about, is it? Because we like consuming, don't we? We like to run our motors. We like to rev our motors up
and
drive our cars
fast. And get
in our
big SUVs and drive down the road.
Run our computers. And don't forget those margarita blenders. We got to keep those things humming too, don't we, Joan?
Absolutely.
What about supermarkets? Tell us what's going on in the world of supermarkets.
Well, speaking of consolidation, if you want a segue, supermarkets are doing the same thing. Now, there's a lot of big names here. I don't know what the big names are in your listeners' different areas, but we're saying that Winn-Dixie, Pathmark, Bilo, Star Markets, Dominick's are all going to be sold. Hmm. And I know that Pathmark is a huge name in the Northeast, and I think Winn-Dixie is a huge name in the South.
What about Piggly Wiggly? They still have those?
I remember seeing those in Philadelphia.
Remember, in Driving Miss Daisy? Remember he was driving her to the Piggly Wiggly?
Yeah, it's the most amazing name.
What a name, Piggly Wiggly.
Anybody would name it that.
Seriously, Joan, I feel sorry for the grocery industry. They've really taken it on the chin because of the proliferation of restaurants. More and more Americans are eating out.
Right, and just they're not bothering to cook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I really feel sorry for them, and I worry about them because I love grocery stores. I like to go to the grocery store.
Well, but my criticism would be I think they could have done a better job of competing if they had thought of new ways of presenting items. You know, I think they should be presenting more ready-to-eat stuff.
What could a restaurant have done to convince Mother to make biscuits in the morning, you know, when McDonald's makes them? I don't think that's going to happen.
What could a restaurant have done?
Yeah, I mean what could a grocery store have done?
No, I'm saying offer the same stuff. Offer ready-to-eat stuff.
I think the only thing they could have done better, Joan, would have been to offer a drive-through.
Yeah.
And maybe come over and cook the biscuits themselves. Let's move over and talk about federal jobs, Joan. This is an interesting little section of your letter. Why do you think it was important to talk about the changes in presidential administration employment?
Well, darn if I know, but my guess is that, sorry, I shouldn't be so irreverent, but.
No, I like that about you, Joan.
Well, I think a lot of times the public might hear that a certain cabinet post has never been filled after two or 3 years, and it's not really that. I don't think people should be horrified in the sense that this kind of thing goes on all the time.
Right.
Not that unusual. So if Bush has a lot of unfilled jobs, there's nothing unusual about his administration. It happens in every administration.
Well, see, the news that I'm taking from this is if we've got jobs that we haven't filled, that used to be filled, how many more jobs could we do without? You know, and if that job is not being filled, that means that maybe we're not making the payroll to that person. And so I wonder if we could just sort of maybe not replace a lot of people. What do you think?
Well, there's this little thing called politics.
Yeah.
And political favors. So,
yeah.
So you think that
Pollyanna needs to get off of that? Is that what you're saying?
I'd go for that.
I don't think we can play the glad game on that one. Do you? What about terrorist attacks, Joan? How's that affecting our world and our economy?
Well, you know, since the tragedy in Spain, there's a lot of talk about fears of terrorist attacks in rail systems.
Yeah.
And certainly in this country, there's a lot of worry about that.
And we probably haven't been paying as much attention to that as we need to. But how do you do
probably
that, Joan?
Not.
How do you monitor the millions of miles of rails that we have in this country? Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. I'll let Joan comment on that some more after these messages. It's 10 Till. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our free newsletter when you get there. Joan Pride is our guest, and she's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, living in our nation's capital as you do, you're a weekday consumer, if not more days than that, at least 5 days a week. You're a consumer of our nation's rail system, aren't you?
I sure am.
How did your life change after 9/11 with regard to the terrorist concerns?
Well, it was very interesting. Right after 9/11, the idea was to try to make the system safer, and I guess they took a page from the book of the London Underground, because our system, which is known as Metro, eliminated all trash cans throughout the system.
Golly.
And I guess the idea was to avoid not allow people to put a bomb in a trash can, and if you go through the London Underground, you have the same problem. There's no trash cans, mm-hmm. which, of course, makes the system dirtier. We used to have a very clean system, and it's not nearly as clean as it used to be. And the other thing, and I know this is going to sound like a small point, but they also eliminated all the newspaper vending machines, which is really annoying. And I kept hoping that maybe someday these things would come back, but since the tragedy in Spain, I can't imagine.
So now the commuters actually have to talk to each other? Wow, that's awful.
Oh, no, we just sleep.
Oh, you don't talk. Instead of reading, you just
right.
nod off then, huh?
Yeah.
Well, Joan,
yeah.
But here's some good news, and because on your way to the airport, as you ride the train to the airport, because I know you don't like to take the ostentatious limousine that you have there, but
right.
But on your way to ride on your private jet, there's some new news out there about how to buy jets, right?
Well, they call them jet cards, which I guess is like a phone card. You buy one for just $100,000 or so, and you can use that to pay for using the private plane.
Right. That gets you in the door. Then you got to pay the hourly and the monthly fees on top
right.
of that.
Right. Now, so the problem I have with that is I just want my own plane.
Aren't you sad now that you went ahead and bought that jet? You could have had a card here.
Right.
Joan, what about the EU? What's up with those guys? What are they doing these days?
Well, you've probably seen there's been a lot in the papers about how the EU is about to expand.
The European Union, ladies and gentlemen.
A whole bunch of Eastern European countries are going to be added, such as Poland, the Czech Republic, and the like, and Hungary.
Are they going to have as much voting power as old Europe, as Mr. Rumsfeld called them?
I would think so. I'm not completely sure about that.
I've mainly watched
what the economic impact is going to be.
What is it going to be?
Well, it's sort of interesting because we're saying that these new members are going to be great as investment opportunities, but if you read a lot of what's out there in the media, this is going to be kind of a tough combination because there's a lot of rules and regulations that the EU imposes in a wide mm-hmm. variety of areas that these mm-hmm. countries are now going to have to abide by.
And Joe, we've spent enough time with those rules and regulations now that some of the old Europe countries are even having trouble abiding by those rules that they made.
That's a good point. Yeah,
they came up with the rules, and now with regard to deficits, aren't they? They've got some challenges there, don't they?
They sure do.
France and Germany, especially.
That's right.
They're having to live with some of the laws that they made, and so you're right. It's going to be interesting. And Joan, how long is it going to be before we have an EU constitution? You know, I predicted that a few years ago, remember?
You did?
Yes,
I did. What was your prediction?
I predicted that there would be a European Union constitution, that they would all still have independent governments, but they would operate by a constitution. I still think they're going to – in fact, they're working on that, Joan.
Well, we're saying that Europe's going to turn further inward politically, so I think it's going to take a while, though, to sort things out.
But further inward politically, that doesn't sound like a good thing, Joan.
Well, and I would think that means more protectionist.
Yeah.
Outwardly.
Yeah, and that's the wrong direction for them. That's the wrong direction for any organization because protectionism is dangerous. Protectionism is negative. It's not a good solution.
Certainly in this global village, that's right.
Right. Joan, can you talk to us about Iraq for 30 seconds?
Oh, for 30 seconds? I think I can do that. Well, you know, once again, we've had some pretty tough headlines recently. And the fighting continues, but we do say that the coalition is not going to fall apart. But the president, I guess, is concerned about the erosion of support within Iraq for what's going on, what the Americans are trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we got to get this Fallujah thing and the other one. What's the other city? I always forget the name.
Najaf
and Fallujah. We got to get those two solved. As you've heard earlier this week, folks, Iraq is not in chaos, only a couple of places, and we got to get those solved, and I think things will get better there. Thanks, Joan, for being here.
Thank you, Jim.
Today, as always. We'll see you next time.
Sounds good.
Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and every member of our military standing a post around the world, especially in Iraq and Afghanistan. God bless you. God be with you. We are proud of you. This is Jim Blassingame. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.